Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it. Touchdown, Bengals. Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone. Touchdown, Bengals. And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out. Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to
rumble! All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Of course, I'm Paul Daner Jr. here with you. We're fresh off our trip from Buffalo.
We're fresh?
Well, you're right. We're not fresh. Joe Reedy, both you and I had long, long days that we are on the back end of right now. But the AM drive out of the hotel in Buffalo was a long time ago for us.
Yeah, and you know, your flight took off on time. I had to barter and horse trade with the fine folks at United Airlines, or else I would. Who knows? I might still be in Newark for all I know.
We're all just thankful there were no murders at the United counter when you were told that you might. The earliest they could get you in was 3, and it was, what time of day was that? Was this at like 5 a.m.?
Yeah, this was 5 a.m. where basically one ticket agent was trying to handle about 30 to 35 people who were scheduled to fly from Buffalo to Newark at 6:15. It wasn't well.
Where would you rate that on your level of rage from you know, 1 to the drive?
You mean the drive of 26 years ago?
I mean, yes, as in the drive. I assume that's probably your highest level of rage.
The drive, the move.
Right.
Seeing Art Modell hoist a Lombardi in the air,
that's the top of
LeBron
rage.
In the decision.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of traumatic stages of rage, Paul.
You weren't near Modell holding the Lombardi, though.
No, this was one of those you've got to be kidding me. But luckily, our Inquirer photographer Joseph Fuqua was on a flight from Chicago and then into Cincinnati that got here. Was supposed to get here, because there's never a thing as United flights taking off on time.
No.
That just doesn't happen with United. No.
But yet you made it.
Yeah, made
but
it.
But yet you did make it
6
in time
minutes
for the
before
Marvin's
press conference.
This is true. Rolled right. Just in time for Marvin to take some shots at you, but what's new? That's just another press conference. We will get to that later. First of all, I want to say, you know, I feel like your rage did not reach kicked out of the airport levels, because
there was an incident in Vegas a couple years ago taking a red eye.
Do tell.
Where the woman tried to say my carry-on was bigger than the allotted space, and it's like,
how dare she?
I'm like, no, it's not. I've taken this on plenty of flights before. And she brought her supervisor, where the supervisor went, "Sir, how many drinks have you had?" I had a couple, but that was 3 hours ago. Where you're too intoxicated to fly.
Oh, kicked off.
I'm like, what?
Joe Reedy kicked off an airplane in Vegas.
Where the rage just went through the charts there, and they were threatening to call TSA. I'm thinking, with a ton of flights, am I going to be on this watch list? And
you'll never be able to travel again.
And everything.
There's going to be a picture up with your, you know, your face is going to be up with a wanted poster at every single gate.
Yes. So I had to take like the first morning flight out the next morning. But the funniest thing, Paul, is the next year I have a different carry-on bag. I get the same gate agent where she challenges me again, plop that puppy right in, fits. I just did like a little mini fist pump to her, and I went, I have not had a drink all day. Now you try throwing me off the plane this time.
Score one for Reedy. Really, score TSA one. Reedy one.
Yes.
But still, hey, you'll take the win when you can get it. But so I was
that was also on United, too, both of those flights. So my rage against United knows no bounds.
Yeah, you were even tweeting angrily at United this morning. That's when I knew what was going on. When
who
I
doesn't
saw my,
tweet angrily at United?
Apparently many people yes. do. They are an object of people's hate. But I think that you have calmed. I think those days of getting tossed off of flights in Vegas are gone. And I know this because this week in your main game story from Buffalo, you referenced two very soft songs. In your first four grabs, you mentioned both Whitney Houston, Saving All My Love for You, and a song called Royals by Lord. But let's just, I'm going to go ahead and play for you what Joe Reedy wrote about. Whitney, go ahead and you start it off. You'll be the opening act.
But each time I try, I just break down and cry, 'cause I'd rather be home feeling blue. So I'm saving all my love for you. You used to tell me.
Oh, that's soft. I mean, it was the number one hit in 1985, the last day that last time the Bengals had won in Buffalo. I get the premise. Whitney is, although I love him, R.I.P. to Whitney.
Yes.
Diva herself. I mean,
I'm incredible. Casey Kasem, and the number one song in the land on this date in 1985 is Whitney Houston. Her second number one single.
Was it?
Yes.
You are a fountain of Whitney knowledge.
Well, I had to go on to Wikipedia, Paul, to look up just, was it the first? Was it her second?
I'm Your Baby Tonight guy. When it comes to her, I think that was maybe my favorite song.
I want to dance with somebody.
Yeah, that's true. That was pretty good. Actually, funny story. Not really. It's a story. The night that she passed away, that news broke. It was after Reds Fest. And all of us had just got done working at Reds Fest. And we went over to Plum Street Cafe. And we're in there having some drinks. Everybody's celebrating the end of it. And, I mean, the place is packed. And the news started circulating. And next thing you know, someone just pumped the jukebox full of like 20 straight Whitney Houston songs, and you'd have thought every single person was in karaoke mode because it was just everyone singing. I've never seen a bigger ode to someone.
I thought Whitney passed away in February, like a night or two before the Grammys.
Was it? Oh, maybe it was. I don't know why we were in Plum Street. Maybe it wasn't Red's Fest. We were in Plum Street, though, and it was packed. I do remember that. Maybe it wasn't Reds Fest, but it was – the place was jammed, and everyone just started singing it, and I still was just – it was ridiculous. It was insane. Well, that's Whitney. That was your one. Let's play the other one that you also connected, what is today's current number one song. Go ahead, Lord.
Hey, it's a 16-year-old New Zealand teenager with the number one song.
I'm not going to hate on 16-year-old New Zealand teenagers. It's the number one song in America, so obviously...
It's not our fault. Blame Billboard.
We blame Billboard.
Blame Ryan Seacrest since he's taken over American Top 40.
But this is my point is not that this is wrong necessarily, even though some might say it is. Probably wrong that we played it. I can tell you that much. Come on.
How many Katy Perry songs did we play 2 weeks ago?
It's not good that our reputation is being built around bad tween music. I mean, it seems to be a continue. But I'm okay with that. My point is, You've softened. You've softened.
I haven't softened.
You know what? People see the Twitter account and the blocks and the amazing GIFs that you've been throwing out lately of many different ways to sarcastically tell people the answers to their questions. But I think you've softened.
I haven't softened. I'm still the same angry little ball of hate that I've always been.
Well, I'm sure I'll regret all of this by the end of this podcast. But I think this story shows that you've softened a little bit. But hey, so let's talk a little bit about this weekend. Obviously, Bengals win 27-24 in overtime. A game that, had they not found a way to win in overtime, would be looked at as a disaster scenario type of L, to be up 14 late and blow it to Thad Lewis would have been an absolute abject disaster. To salvage it, it's like nothing went wrong. You know, you're in first place by yourself. You're 4-2. With a tough game at Detroit, but a very winnable Jets home game following that, and you're feeling great. But man, how close it came to being a one where we're talking about negative momentum affecting the rest of the season.
And you talk about road games, Chicago and the turnovers. Cleveland offense just played utterly horrible. And then this one, offense played well. Thad Lewis, defense kept him well in check if it wasn't for three long pass plays and three secondary breakdowns, when it's like, wait a minute, you guys played a game of your life against Tom Brady, and all of a sudden Thad Lewis gets out the cutlery and is dicing, and then just Thad Lewis is his Thadness.
His Thadness. He was, well, and the thing was, it was – you know, I think the unknown factor of him was the issue early on. And, you know, I wrote about the halftime adjustment that Mike Zimmer made of changing the keys in the running, because they were just getting torn up in the run. And once they realized, hey, Thad is not a real threat to run, let's not treat him as such, and let's focus all our attention on the running backs, they stopped the run. I mean, the run was really not much of a problem at that point. The problem was finishing the game out, and the offense had a chance to do it, the defense had a chance to do it, and neither of them could, and left the
door
open.
Special teams had a chance to do it.
Right, absolutely. All three phases just needed a stop or a made field goal or an extra inch for a first down or a spot on the sideline, and it would have never come down to that. But that's the NFL, and Vinny Ray was the predictor of all of this. When he told us last week about his days playing at Duke with Thad Lewis, he said the thing about him is, I remember game after game where he would just fight to the very end. And Duke was on the wrong side of a lot of scores. He would never quit. He would constantly be bringing them back. And sure enough, there it was playing out on Sunday. But hey, overtime comes. Give this team some credit. Offense, defense, and special teams, particularly special teams, with a redemptive overtime, ends up flipping the script. And the bottom line is this. In the NFL, on the road, walk away with a win and don't ask any questions, particularly going to a place like Buffalo.
And walk away from a win, and you're now 4-2 with a game lead on mm-hmm. Cleveland and Baltimore. And, you know, things looking pretty decent right now. They took advantage of things. The offense, probably the best we've seen them this year. I like the balance and everything.
Certainly for three quarters. I mean, yeah. if they could have just had the one more drive, and really almost one more first down to finish it off, we would be – I think there would be more praise. But it's certainly deserved. I mean, Dalton 26 of 40, 337, three touchdowns, a lot of yak, which we'll get into. I want to talk a little bit about this, though. We of course, as we do on most Mondays, talk with the coordinator. Jay Gruden was on tap this week with a few of the reporters. He talked a lot about Andy, his progression, and I thought it was a really interesting stuff from Jay here. So I want to listen to him talking about Andy Dalton, his progression, and really a lot of the offense and its versatility that it showed this week. Here's Jay Gruden.
Couple weeks in a row, Andy's had looked like they're just poor decisions on the interceptions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if yesterday was basically that too. Do those tend to overshadow a lot of the good he does?
Yeah, he had a couple head scratchers in the game. You know, that interception was mainly one of them. But Leonard was standing right there; he never moved. And
did he not see him?
He said he never saw him.
Yeah. You guys seem to have an animated conversation right after that. Look like you guys are funny. You guys look like one of these. We were just trying to tell him there had to be somebody else.
I saw him there. I don't know why he didn't see him. I was curious. I mean, he lined up there.
You're 30 miles away. Yeah. 30
he lined up there away. And he never moved. You know, And it was right in the throwing lane, obviously. And
what was his rationale?
He said he never saw him. Yeah. I said, you need to look.
That's good NFL film stuff. Right there. That'd be great.
Jay, he gets a lot of heat. He's been taking a lot of heat since Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Can't do this, can't do that. He sucks. But at the end of the day, the guy wins games, and he's kind of a resilient guy that seems to make the most out of what he's got. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is he doing what you need him to do?
No, he did yesterday. You know, he threw for over 300 yards, and he had the one bad pass, and you know, one other two bad decisions, but made some great plays. You know, like you said, with his feet and a couple good audibles, and the things that get overshadowed or don't get looked at is what he does in the running game. Gets us in the right runs, where we have a chance. You know, and then it's up to the line and the backs after that. But really good game manager, and really what I was most impressed with yesterday was a lot of the touch passes that he had, the touch passes Sanzibach. You know, I think the one thing that he struggled with is the soft touch throws. You know, he throws everything one speed a little bit too often, but yesterday he threw a nice touch pass to Sanzibach over the middle where he one-handed it, and the touch passes on the swing passes were outstanding. He gave A.J. Green a chance on the corner out, nice and high over the top, which was great to see. You know, something we've really been harping on, to give it to him up and outside where they can go up and get it. So he really did some good things. You know, anytime he went on the road and put up those kind of numbers, man, it's impressive. And you know, Flacco just went up there a couple weeks ago, threw five picks. You know? Throw the ball 35, 40 times, you're probably going to make a bad decision or two. You know, you're not going to be perfect. So we're happy with what he did.
And those three swing passes to Gio was right on the money. He didn't have to stop or anything. It was just dropped right in there.
Yeah. And sometimes there's an end right there where he has to navigate over the end with a high release and nice touch pass where he gets them out in front and he leads them and runs. So, you know, they're important. Those are huge. And, you know, overall, you have the greatest performance in a positive way. We're still going to coach him up on the negative ones, you know, a few of the bad decisions. But, you know, I think he played well.
Does his pocket presence still make you a little bit uneasy?
Yeah, sometimes. And I think that's something that, you know, as a young quarterback, that's something you're just going to have to fight through. And that's why all these reps that he's had over the last couple of years, they just continue to add up. And the more experience you get, live situations with people coming at you, stepping up, knowing when to throw it away, when to step to your right, when to step up into the pocket, when to run, all those, you know, they're different every time, but the more experience you get with it, the better your decision-making can be and the more confidence you'll have when the pocket does break down.
Does he need to do more of that like he did yesterday, a lot of, if it's not there immediately, running out and extending the play? Does he need to do more of that?
Well, you know, every play is its own entity, obviously, and sometimes it warrants that. Sometimes the coverage is very tight. Guys get jammed. They don't get off the jam right, and he's stuck there with the ball with nobody to throw to. Sometimes it happens. And he does need to either extend the play or throw it away, one or the other. And you know, that, like I said, that's just going to come with time. You know, it just doesn't happen overnight. You know, some guys are naturally gifted in that regard as far as buying time and work in the pocket. Some guys just need it over and over again, and hopefully he'll get it.
Last 2 weeks, have you been pleased with the variety of your passing game? Because New England, early on, it was the tight ends. They were really involved. Then the receivers. This game, not so much the tight ends, but the yards after the catch, the quick screens, and mm-hmm. that stuff. You're really showing that if you counter with this, we can do this. And
yeah, and a lot of times, in fairness, the tight ends were, you know, in the two tight end packages this week, they were in protection a little bit more than normal because of all the blitzes that Buffalo had. But you know, they'll be involved next week, maybe more, maybe less. Who knows? We'll see how it dictates. But it's important to get different people involved, and that's the whole goal of this offense is to, it could be Gio 1 week in the passing game. It could be AJ, a big dose. It could be Tyler. It could be Jermaine. And the more our players buy into that, that every play, you know, they have a chance to get the ball and they run routes like it's their play, the better we'll be.
I guess that's kind of what I was getting at, because you guys aren't pigeonholed that we got to rely on these two guys.
Yeah.
You got now like six or seven different ones, because even, I mean, that little shovel pass to Gio, it's like, here, yeah. Go do what you
do. Yeah, well, we had four verticals on that play, and all four of them were viable options on that play, and Andy felt pressure stepped up, and Gio flashed, and he just flipped it to him, and Gio did the rest. It was a similar play to that we ran against Pittsburgh when he scored. So anytime you get him the ball in space, you know, that's what we've been dying for around here for a few years, for somebody like that, and you can see why, how important it is.
And so let's go from here, because you heard Jay talk a lot about where Dalton is at, and there's been a lot of criticism directed at him, understandably, from people around here. The question that I have is the criticism of Andy Dalton fair right now?
Until he wins a game with his arm, the criticism's going to be there.
Right.
Pittsburgh won it with the running game and a couple explosive plays. Green Bay, they rallied. Defense basically won that game in the end.
Yeah, gave him 14 points.
Yeah, defense won the New England game, for lack of a better term, and they had struggles on offense then. This game, combination of offense and defense wins it, but have we ever had a case where he's won the game on his arm? Cleveland last year, maybe. Washington, big plays, but those were the explosives with a lot of yak there. Until he wins a game with his arm, there's going to be people wonder if he does it. But right now, he's managed things well, and they're 4-2.
But is that part of him winning his game with his arm? Is that Andy Dalton doesn't – I guess this is the way I want to phrase it. Andy Dalton doesn't necessarily win games with his arm as much as he wins games with his head and with the way he plays the game. I mean, Jay talked a lot about, hey, you know, what people don't talk about. He gets us into these great run fits. He knows where plays to go. He made some great audibles. He made a lot of nice throws. Now, should he be hated on because he threw a lot of passes that were short that receivers broke? I don't think so. Anybody that says, oh, yeah, 337, but it was all yak. Well, maybe it was, but that was the game plan. That was where they decided to exploit it. And people said Dalton needs to be better because now he has all these weapons. He used his weapons. So there shouldn't, no one should be complaining about how he used his weapons, because he found ways to use them.
Well, I think the other thing too, Paul, is that in the past, he used to throw at one speed. Those little screen passes, and we had a good view of how those screen passes would develop, that takes an incredible amount of touch, and also getting it to the spot where your receivers don't have to wait for the ball. It's on a dime, they catch it, they go. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that when they won the preseason game against Tennessee that we commented a lot about, was that now he's finally put the ball in spaces where his receivers can make the plays and they can generate the yards after the catch, get the explosives, be in the open field, and do that. Now, he threw, I think he had three completions of where the ball was in the air 15 yards or more. Great pass to A.J. Green in the first quarter to set things up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's doing the plays to make it win. I know there were a couple of people who were like, well, the tight ends weren't involved this week. No, but the receivers were, and they got the catches. That's the thing about the passing game now, is that if you load it up and you want to stop A.J. Green or put 8 or 9 in a box to stop the running game, there's options now. You want to put 8 and 9 in a box, we'll beat you with the tight ends. You want to load up on the tight ends and take that away, we'll throw it to the receivers. You want a single A.J., we'll beat you with A.J. There's more options here now, and there's more of a maturity with this offensive group. But I think people still remember the disaster in Cleveland of a couple weeks ago, which is where a lot of this is going. I mean, after week one, everybody was praising Dalton, thinking he was on the right track. It's like, you know, it's still regular season to go. Just like people shouldn't have been too sky high after Chicago, it shouldn't have been the sky that's falling after Cleveland.
Yeah, it's and 10 games left. There's plenty of time. And I think you talk about the versatility and just what that to me, that's part of Andy Dalton's strength. Is he's great at knowing how to utilize everybody and really understanding what the defense is trying to do. And put in game manager is like the ugly duckling of quarterback terms. I mean, nobody wants to be called a great game manager. I don't know that in Andy Dalton's case that is necessarily a bad thing. I think it's one of his biggest strengths is that he does know how to – when you have these types of playmakers, he knows how to put them in the right spots. And you see him doing that and taking what the defense gives him. And so, and any time you go and rack up 337 yards on the road at Buffalo, as Jay told us today, oh, reminder, Joe Flacco just threw 5 picks up there in an L a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, they lead the league in interceptions, 3rd in sacks. I think they got only 3 sacks in this game. Yeah. 2 of them were from, you know, Andy not getting rid of the ball when he should have. Yeah. One of them was just free runner that nobody could contain, and there was the sack that way. And, you know, the interception of Jim Leonard, way ill-advised.
Yes, loved that conversation we had with Jay talking about where he said, "Yeah, you should have seen him." I mean, like, you know, were you going to look at him? It's one of the, you see those animated conversations. Funny to hear what Jay was actually saying to Andy after that.
Yeah, where when he's had picks, they've been ugly picks.
Yeah, the last couple in particular.
Yeah, haven't been any pick sixes yet, but they've been some ugly picks that people remember. And, you know, I've said it a couple times too, and this is always the elephant in the room, and it's a giant elephant in an orange Bengals jersey with a number 9 on it that, you know, we judge Andy harsher based on the past and what ye whose name shall not be spoken, did with the long passing game and everything and threw it up there and just had this great arm. And this is a different quarterback. And also, ye whose name shall not be spoken had a longer leash, longer than he should have probably had.
Exactly.
And now the leash with Andy is a lot shorter compared to that. I mean, even the thing with Adam Jones last week, the Pro Football Talk thing.
Right.
Where if you read Adam's comments, they're perfectly fine and
which for reference were him basically saying he was asked, is he sure that Andy Dalton can lead this team to the Super Bowl? He said, I'm 99% sure. The headline is Pac-Man not 100% sure Dalton can lead the team.
Right. And I mean, if you're Andy or anybody else and you look at the headline, you're like, what the heck?
And we saw that conversation happen in the locker room, actually. I mean, not that it was any massive thing, but we saw them talking about it.
No, where Adam said, just read the thing.
Yeah.
And he read it, and it's like, yeah, okay. And I asked Andy about it on Sunday, and Andy was very good as, you know, he's got my back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things you don't say never and you don't say always.
Yeah.
Because you can't deal on absolutes. And, you know, there is loyalty, but I don't know of a place where there's 100% loyalty. If you're at 99, you're pretty damn good.
Absolutely. I think I'm really happy that we were just talking about ye whose name shall not be mentioned and about listening to outside criticism, particularly that. Marvin Lewis, interestingly, I equated it to if you've ever watched a bad NBA regular season tilt with two bad teams and like one good player, where the one good player just screws around for 3 quarters and in the 4th quarter just catches fire at the end, dunking on people, hitting threes, hook shots to try and win a game. Marvin was like Vince Carter with the early 2000 Toronto Raptors today, where he waited until the last 4 minutes of his press conference and went into some very interesting stuff and caught a little bit of fire. Here's the end of Marvin Lewis's press conference, talking about Andy Dalton, talking about not listening to Ye, who's taking a shot at Joe, as he always does. You mentioned Carson, you mentioned all these things. Very interesting stuff from Marvin Lewis. So here's Marvin. You enjoy.
You mentioned yesterday, Coach, that Andy's at his best when he doesn't listen to people outside of Ball Brown Stadium. Is that something he's had to develop, or is that something you saw with him?
No, I think that's something that Andy's, you know, probably been pretty good with, you know. And, but, you know, the problem, I think, that professional sports kind of endures now, problem good, bad, or indifferent, it's the way it is there's so much that the others around you always are constantly, you know, I guess, wondering about and questioning, and hopefully they don't let that. That's why I tell our guys all the time, just don't listen to, you know, wife, mom, dad, girlfriend, so forth. So I get it from my mom, gee whiz, so, you know, you know, if you want to know something, just ask me, you know, don't believe Joe, you know, particularly Hobson, you know what I mean, so.
Do you think I thought you said you guys yesterday wasn't
you good? Well, sometimes my mom, she believes you guys, you know.
Do you think part of Andy's problem is he's like
the Andy kid. Doesn't have a problem.
He's not, but no, please let me finish. He's not pretty. He's not fancy. He's kind of the face of this team. He just does his job, and he doesn't, you know, he just doesn't do it with a lot of pizzazz.
Well, I think the, you know, I think you compare Andy where he is with the there's a couple of different comparisons. Are you comparing Andy to Matt Ryan? Are you comparing Andy to Drew Brees and, Aaron Rodgers? It depends on who you want to compare him to. You know what I'm saying? And those latter two are different time frame. They sat around and watched for 3 years, 4 years. And then they got opportunity 2-3 years. You know, I think Drew played his third year, right? And, you know, Aaron Rodgers sat for longer than that. So, you know, that's, I think, a little bit of the difference. You know, we're asking for Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers right now, today. You know, and he's being compared to Matt Ryan, obviously, who has done well. And so, and Flacco, who went through a progression. And those are all the guys that, you know, I watched on tape, you know, as we, you know, evaluated the quarterbacks, but went back and watched their tape. And so, you know, he's doing well. He's directing our football team, and we're in a good spot. We have to keep going, but you know, we can't recreate history. You know, those guys created a timeline and so forth, and Andy's got his own timeline going on, and right now it's pretty good, and we got to keep going forward with it. And you know, very supportive of him, as I told him. You know, it's his football team. You know, and you just keep doing it your way and keep doing it, and there's going to be a play, oh shoot, that's not, but they all have that, you know. Peyton Manning had a different timeline, you know, and but we're asking for special, and we're looking for special each and every day, and I think that's what we're all, you know, that's what the expectations are. So, and he's got to keep shouldering that and moving forward.
Which I haven't mentioned, guys, throughout the league, but it is also unfair to compare him against his predecessor, who had a year to sit and develop and then came on.
Yeah, but I don't know that his predecessor has won these kind of games week in and week out, you know, and I think that's important, you know, all the time, you know, that, you know, it's the ultimate goal we all have is to win the football game, and we wish it could be, you know, tens across the board, but this doesn't necessarily do it. You know, if we had a 10 last week on defense, we didn't quite make a 10 this a week ago, yesterday. You know what I mean? And that's the way it's going to be through the NFL. And last week's recipe is not going to be next week's recipe. Whatever it took last week, you're going to have to be different people. And hopefully, we got, you know, new guys step up and come to the forefront and are there. You know, so we just got to keep going.
Which I guess just. Question from what you raised, what do you mean by what type of, he's a, winning those type of games? Is it the grind? You mean the grind out games, the close games, or
it's the game where every play matters? Probably, I guess. You know what I mean? It's that kind of game. You know what I mean? Where every single play matters. And we've been in those games this year, you know, where every game matters. I mean, it's the third down play over on the sideline to AJ, you know, that he's got to make sure of the location of the DB before he lets it go. And it's just a tick out of bounds. You know what I mean? So, that's a play that goes down as an incompletion. But as a coach, you're thinking that's a great play by our quarterback because he didn't put us in harm's way, you know. And and if we're a tick closer, now we're lining up, have a chance to have one play and a whack at a field goal. If we get our hands inside, we don't get the penalty on the other side. You know what I mean? So, but that's the kind of game we're playing. And, those are good things. And I think we just have to keep moving forward that way. And hopefully we can, as we go, it balances out and we get on the upside of those, you know, where they're not every play matters like that as much.
You know, the thing I was most pleased about?
What's that?
Marvin's mom reads.
Hey, all we care about is did we get our click? Because that's what our bosses care about. Did you come to the website? If Marvin's mother is coming to Cincinnati.com, we have succeeded. That's one more click for us.
Yeah.
And job security.
Yeah, it's like, and that's not the first time in a press conference this year Marvin's thrown Mother Lewis under the bus, I think.
Poor Mother Lewis. She's really finding her way into the conversations around here. But let's talk about what he said. You touched on this, comparing Dalton with Carson. What you were saying was it's because they're so different and the leash that was given to Carson, Dalton should be shorter. Now, isn't Dalton's leash going to be shorter until that contract is signed? Isn't it like a probationary period basically for him until they decide one way or the other if they're gonna ride with Andy Dalton?
Well, I mean, that's a leash due to the new CBA and everything with 4-year deals, but you know, it started out with Marvin trying to compare Andy to Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers and all that, which it's like, okay, you want to compare him to the rest of the league, you know, that's well and good, but you know, there's a bigger specter that still reigns in this building over who was here and what he did.
Yeah.
Do we expect Andy to be like Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan? I don't. But you kind of weighed it against his immediate predecessor, who, you know, had some great seasons here, statistics wise, but never led this team to a playoff win.
No.
0-2. That's Andy's record now. 0-2. But until he gets that playoff win, or like I said, until there's that one game where he basically goes out, puts a team on his shoulders and on his arm and leads him to a win, there's going to be people wondering if he can do it.
Yeah. And people will always remember Carson Palmer of 05. Do you buy into the basically the shot that Marvin took at Carson of saying, you know, he didn't win these types of games? I mean, is that fair? I remember a lot of games in 09 that looked like a lot of wins that Andy Dalton has had here. I think they play a different style, and you can argue whatever you want about what happened in 2010 and other years, but, I mean, I don't know how fair that was.
09, there were the rallies. 04, there was that game in Baltimore.
Yeah.
But when there were a lot of close games, more often than not, the Bengals lost those, but I could also go, you could pin some of those before Zim got here on the defense. You could pin a lot of those on coaching decisions and strategy.
And a lot of those on wide receivers.
Yes.
Particularly in 2010.
Oh, yeah. The pick sixes in 2010, I think there were only two that I would put firmly on CP, the rest on receivers being receivers. But That 2010 game against Tampa Bay, perfect example. Mm-hmm. If the OC or the head coach doesn't approve a passing play on third down at midfield with Tampa Bay having no timeouts, where all you got to do is run the friggin' puppy, you go down at a two-minute warning and then punt, Tampa Bay is pinned with no timeouts, needing a touchdown through an interception off a boneheaded deflection off a receiver, but that was the play call.
Yeah.
And then, oh yeah, game's tied, you can go into overtime, kneel on it. You call another pass play.
Brutal.
Yeah, I think we could do an NFL top 10 decisions on game managements over the past 11 years. It's like, yeah, your quarterback made some mistakes when he didn't have, but, you know, there were a lot of times when you didn't exactly put your quarterback in the right position.
Right, and this was also mentioned by Marvin, was some of Dalton's best plays are ones that just keep him out of harm's way. They particularly mentioned the catch towards the end of regulation, or the near catch that A.J. Green had, where he's barely it was a great throw. And Jay talked about the deep throw to A.J. for the touchdown up high over the top to the outside, which is where so many passes to A.J. Green should go, because he's the only guy maybe in the league, outside of a guy we'll see this week, that can probably make that play. Seeing there is something to be said for making the throw that avoids disaster. Case in point, just in the media room, we were discussing Alex Smith and Andy Dalton and their similarities in their styles. The Kansas City Chiefs are 6-0. The Bengals are 4-2. Quarterbacks that, for the most part, focus on not turning the ball over, making the smart play, learning to live another day when necessary. They're winning. They're both winning. And Alex Smith has done a lot of winning. Now, yeah, you can argue why, or defense in San Francisco, or anything you want, but knowing how you need to win is something.
Yeah, and I think when he finally got a right scheme with Harbaugh, 2011 and part of last year until he got hurt, they were winning. He was in a scheme where it behooved him to be successful. And now with Andy Reid, I mean, that's looking like it's trade of the year right now, mm-hmm, with Kansas City acquiring Alex Smith and seeing what he can do and everything.
And it's interesting, you know, so we talk about these types of quarterbacks and discuss comparisons. Here's a quarterback comparison that you can also listen to us talk more about on Cincinnati.com Sports Beyond the Stripes with Paul Docker, presented by JosephAuto.com, 7 o'clock from the Moorland Lager House.
With special guest George Iloka.
Special guest George Iloka this week. Very excited about that. Who is probably going to be doing some sort of yoga, possible yoga instruction.
I was just going to mention the big surprise finish, but you just gave it away.
I'll go ahead and put it. Listen, we need to reward people that listen to the podcast, okay? They can't just come here and then we send them another teaser where they have to come back again. No, people that listen to the podcast get the inside information. They get the scoop.
By the way, how are our ratings lately? Have we gotten any more comments? Or
I don't know if our ratings are up, but every time we post one, I get people on Twitter telling me how much they liked it. Almost immediately, they've already listened to it. I'll post it by 11, and by 12, and it was an hour long, someone's already commenting on something we said in the last 3 minutes, or how much they liked it. So I don't need the ratings. I'm getting my validation. All right, and we keep giving them treats like our little yoga preview here. You know, they're going to keep coming back. So make sure you watch that. Okay, so here's where I was going, though, before that tangent. You talk about types of quarterbacks and proper comparisons. Let's take a look at this weekend. Andy Dalton and Matt Stafford, who Matt Stafford could not be more of the exact – he's the anti-Dalton.
Polar opposite.
He's the anti-Dalton. He just throws for numbers and yards, and it's so impressive, and he makes every throw, but can't really win games. A lot of critical picks, hasn't won a lot, had a one good run, I guess.
Injury problems.
Yes, injury. I mean, there's so many, but all these numbers, it's so pretty. Oh, it's so pretty. It's so flashy. But at the end of the day, do you want that? Or do you want Andy Dalton, who has found ways to keep his team out of harm's way, not be flashy and win a lot of games?
This game could be a track meet on Sunday because
– maybe this is the game where Dalton has to win it with his arm.
Yeah, because if you love Yak, and you know I love Yak.
You're a big Yak guy.
I'm a big Yak guy.
Yeah.
These are two of the top five or six teams in Yak in the league.
Reggie Bush, a main reason for that.
Yeah, Reggie Bush.
As is Gio.
Yeah, but I think Calvin Johnson, too. I think Reggie and Gio 1 and 2 in terms of average yak per catch and everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just wish we have like a Madden controller at the press box, which that is a high boy in that stadium.
We're going up north for the press box at Ford Field.
That's a high boy.
We'll have plenty of good angles for all the yak. So you dodged my question because I'm saying, would you prefer the pretty and the make every throw, Matt Stafford? If you were drafting the Bengals right now, and I said Stafford and Dalton are available, who do you want? Who would you take today?
I'm looking at the entire roster and I'm seeing who to plop in at quarterback.
You have a quarterback spot to fill. Stafford and Dalton are available. He would join your team Tuesday. Who are you going with, Stafford or Dalton?
I'm probably going with Stafford. But you're going the makeup of the roster and everything. I see I got a top 10 defense. I see I got two pretty good backs. I've got AJ Green. If you're giving me my choice with the spot totally open, I'm probably taking Stafford. But is Stafford a West Coast quarterback?
Let's say if
I'm looking at natural athletic ability and everything, I'm taking Stafford.
I would like the guy who has the reputation for finding ways to win games. Matt Stafford has not been a winner at any level. Georgia is the closest you'll get his sophomore year when they went and beat Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl. They were a huge disappointment his last year there when they were ranked number one preseason, got run by the Sabanator on Saturday Night Football, and just were a general disappointment with him, with no Sean Moreno, a number of great players on that team.
Okay, but here's the thing with Stafford, too, because that one year the Lions played well. The Lions have also resembled the Bengals of 2006 to 2008 with their off-field incidents and team gone wild. Now, this is where you go, okay, can a natural athletic ability beat Nnamdi Kanu going Nnamdi Kanu? Nick Fairley doing absolutely stupid things. Titus Young,
right,
going off the reservation and then some. I mean, I think this Lions team is more mature because I think Mayhew and Jim Schwartz, mm-hmm. who Marvin, Jim are fairly close, and mm-hmm. I'm sure Jim during the team gone wild talked to Marvin a lot about this.
Yeah,
that. There was, because let's face it, that was a woebegone organization that had been winless in 2008, and all of a sudden in 3 years during the playoffs. To me, that's a bigger turnaround than the Bengals. When you're the first 0-16 team in league history, and 3 years later you're in the playoffs, that's a hell of a turnaround.
To me, you just described a team that needs a leader and doesn't have one in Matt Stafford, a guy who you talk about. Take your team, own the team, lead the team. People can talk whatever they want to about Andy Dalton. He's been the primary leader on this team. And as Marvin said, it's your team for a while, and they keep winning.
You have had
a really strong locker room. Let's give some credit there as well.
It's a strong locker room.
Yeah.
It's a strong locker room where you – Because when Marvin brought Andy in 2011 and said, you're immediately going to start, he pointed 2003. I needed to win that locker room over in 03, and if I put Carson in there, that's probably a mistake. That probably would have been a mistake where it's better for him to learn the 1 year. This, the locker room was more mature, more stable to where you could put a rookie quarterback in there and let him grow in with the group. Stafford in 2009 in Detroit, you were at rock bottom, new administration, new coaching staff, you were 0-16, there was nowhere to look but up, and you knew that you were gutting things. This, there were still some veterans here because of cap and everything else that you had to win over. Detroit was just purging as many reminders of Matt Millen that they humanly can without burning the building down. And, you know, you still had Megatron, who you drafted the year before.
Yeah.
So, and I still laugh every time Matt Millen talks about drafting wide receivers and stuff, because God knows he drafted so many that he had to, at least he was lucky on one that Detroit's got a cornerstone. But, right. I mean, Stafford, and like I said, you look at natural athletic ability, yeah, I'd probably go Stafford. Now, if you know, you're interviewing them and everything, who knows? But,
yeah,
you know, mainly on arm and stuff, probably I'd go Stafford right now.
It would be an interesting decision. The only time it will ever happen, though, is in a Madden game, which, like we said, you may actually be watching on Sunday. I have to go franchise GM mode and attempt to do a QB trade.
I like Andy and what he's done so far.
Yeah.
Take away the Cleveland game. But, you know, so far he's... You know, you take away the turnovers and everything, too.
Yeah.
I think, because we were talking about this earlier, the closest to where this passing game involved everyone, and you saw AJ being explosive and so forth, was the Chicago game. They committed 3 turnovers. They lost. You basically do what the defense gives you, and as Marvin said, you exploit the coverage areas with whoever may be, and that's how you win.
And they're learning how to do that now. And that's part of the process with the
some
new
balance
pieces.
Too.
Yeah, they're figuring it out. That's part of it. Is you're figuring it out so that by the time the last quarter of this season comes, you know exactly how to utilize all the pieces against whatever the defense presents.
Getting to know you. Getting to know.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Are you trying to send me a hint that you'd like to go out with that?
No. No, you know what we should go out with, because
we got to give the people what they want.
Because this kind of describes a fan's relationship with Andy Dalton, and I think it could be, if you would see kind of a melody between the fans and Andy, and since we're going to Detroit this weekend.
Yes.
I think a little Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow picture.
Picture. You think, well, let's bring them in, Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow, while Joe describes why this is the song for their relationship.
Because you're basically longing for someone, and you're trying to make it right, and it's just, you know,
you're soft. You've gone soft, Joe. I like it. We're going to let Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow take it out. Joe claims to be the little ball of hate he always was, but yet... I don't think so. I think it's all a facade. He's turned into a softie here on this podcast.
Okay, if I'm turning soft, I might as well do this. Hey, Mom.
I love it. Joe Reedy, Paul Dater Jr., of course, check everything out on the blog, Cincinnati.com. Web stories all day. We'll be in Detroit with plenty of good times. 7 o'clock every Tuesday. More Line Lager House, Beyond the Stripes, at Paul Dater Jr. by USWallow.com. We'll be there. Thank you, Kid Rock. Thank you, Sheryl Crow. Thank you, Whitney. Next to thank her. You, Lord. Have a good one. We will talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
I put your picture away. Sat down and cried today. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to her. I called you last night in the hotel. Everyone knows, but they won't tell. But their half-hearted smiles.
than old friends.
It was the same old same, how have you been?
Since you've been gone, my world's been dark and gray.
You reminded me of brighter days.
I hoped you were coming home to stay. I was headed to church.
I was off to drink you away.
Thought about you for a long time. Can't seem to get you off my mind. I can't understand why we're living life this way. I found your picture today. I swear I'll change my ways. I just called to say I want you to come back home. I found your picture today. I swear I'll change my ways. I just